Now we come to the part three of the path of purification. The order gives us information on the three steps or three stages: sila, samadhi, and panya. So up to chapter 13, the first two stages, sila and samadhi, are explained. And so with this chapter begins understanding or panya, the third stage in the spiritual development. Description of the soil in which understanding grows. So this is called the soil of understanding, or the soil of panya. So the first chapter, or chapter 14, but the first chapter of this part deals with the aggregates. But first, about panya. So now concentration was described under the heading of consciousness in this stanza: when a wise man established well in virtue develops consciousness and understanding. And this stanza appeared at the beginning of the book. So there we find the word consciousness. And by consciousness is meant samadhi or concentration. So concentration has been explained with different kinds of samatha meditation. So now it's a time to talk about panya. All that has been developed in all its aspects by the bhikkhu who is thus possessed of the more advanced development of concentration that is acquired with direct knowledge, the benefits under understanding, but understanding comes next. And that is still to be developed. So up to this point, we have not yet developed understanding. We have developed concentration. So now, that is not easy, development of panya. Firstly, even to know about, let alone to develop, when it is taught very briefly. In order, therefore, to deal with the detailed method of its development, there is the following set of questions. So these questions will be answered one by one. Now, what is understanding? So understanding panya is of many sorts and has various aspects and different kinds of panyas. And an answer that attempted to explain it all would accomplish neither its intention nor its purpose, and would besides lead to distraction. So we shall confine ourselves to the kind intended here, which is understanding consisting in insight knowledge associated with profitable consciousness. So here understanding means kusala, wholesome or profitable, or which accompanies the wholesome consciousness and which consists in insight knowledge. The word vipassana in Pali is in fact a synonym for panya. So vipassana and panya are synonymous in many places. So here by panya is meant vipassana, insight knowledge. In what sense is it understanding? It is a definition of the word panya. It is understanding in the sense of act of understanding. These definitions are actually very difficult to translate into any language. So understanding is panya. Understanding is understanding. What is this act of understanding? It is knowing in a particular mode, separate from the modes of perceiving and cognizing. Now there are three kinds of understanding or knowing: the knowing of the panya, knowing of sanya, and knowing of consciousness or vijnana. So these three are differentiated here. So panya is said to be called understanding or knowing because it knows in a particular mode, separate from, that means different from, the modes of perceiving and cognizing. For though the state of knowing is equally present in perception, in consciousness, and in understanding, nevertheless, perception is only the mere perceiving of an object, let's say blue or yellow. So just mere perceiving of an object is called perception, sanya. It cannot bring about the penetration of its characteristic as impermanent, painful, and not self. So it is, maybe it is the first reaction to the object. The next one is consciousness. Consciousness knows the object as blue or yellow, and it brings about the penetration of its characteristics. So at the consciousness stage, it knows the characteristics, but it cannot bring about by endeavoring the manifestation of supramundane path. Understanding knows the object in the way already stated. That means both mere perception and penetration of characteristics. It brings about the penetration of characteristics, and it brings about by endeavoring the manifestation of the path. So panya is the best of the three. Only through panya can there be the penetration into the nature of things. And then a simile is given. Suppose there were three people and so on. So a child, a villager, and a money changer, or someone who is familiar with coins and money and so on. So the understanding of these three persons are different. Is different. A child knows that it is a round thing. It may not know that it can be used to exchange with some other things, but it will know that it is a round thing, so it is yellow or it is white or something like that. But a villager, an ordinary person, knows it is a round thing made of, say, copper or silver or gold, and he also knows that it can be used as money. But the money changer, or a person who is familiar with money, knows all these two, and also knows that, say, it's a coin, and he knows when it was struck, when it was made, and then he knows the value of the coins and so on. So he knows everything there is to know about the coin. So in the same way, panya, perception is like the child. So without discretion, seeing the coin, because it apprehends the mere mode of appearance of the object. Consciousness is like the villager seeing the coin. And understanding is like the money changer seeing the coin and then understanding everything about the coin. So this is the difference between three kinds of knowing. The knowing of sanya, knowing of consciousness, the knowing of panya. In the definition of these three words, in these three words, there is the root nya, sanya, there is nya, and vijnana, there is nya, and panya, there is nya. So the root nya means to know. So these three know the object, but their knowing is different. So the knowing of panya is the most penetrating. That is why this act of understanding should be understood as knowing in a particular mode, separate from or different from the modes of perceiving and cognizing. For that is what the word "it is understanding" in the sense of act of understanding refer to. However, it is not always to be found where perception and consciousness are. You know, there are, say, 89 types of consciousness, and not all are accompanied by panya. Only some are accompanied by panya. Say unwholesome consciousness, the types of consciousness are not accompanied by panya. Even among the wholesome and, say, the functional, there are some that are not accompanied by panya. So it is not always to be found where perception and consciousness are. But when it is not disconnected from those states. So panya can be found with some types of consciousness, but perception accompanies every type of consciousness. So wherever there is perception and consciousness, there is not necessarily paññā. But wherever there is paññā, there is also perception and consciousness. And when it is found with perception and consciousness, it is not disconnected from these states. That means it arises with these states. It is not mixed up with, say, perception and consciousness, mixed up by way of its characteristic and so on. So, because it cannot be taken as disconnected, thus, this is perception, this is consciousness, this is understanding, its difference is consequently subtle and hard to see. Hence, the Venerable Nagasena said, a difficult thing, O King, has been done by the Blessed One, and so on. So it is, for ordinary people, it is very difficult to see, to differentiate, say, this is perception, this is consciousness, this is understanding, this is contact, and so on. And here, Venerable Nagasena said to King Milinda that the Buddha has done a difficult thing. And what is that difficult thing? The defining or differentiating the immaterial states of consciousness and its concomitants, which occur with a single object. That means consciousness and mental concomitants arise at the same time, taking the same object. So although they take the same object, they are by characteristic and so on, or by nature, different. So defining the material states of consciousness and its concomitants, which occur with a single object, and which he declared thus, this is contact, this is feeling, this is perception, this is volition, this is consciousness. So it is very difficult for ordinary people to see these mental states clearly and to say, and this is contact, this is feeling, and so on. But following his teachings, and through practice of vipassana meditation, many of these mental states can be seen or known or experienced. Many meditators come to see these mental states clearly through the practice of vipassana meditation. And Venerable Nagasena gave a simile that you pick up a handful of water from the ocean, and it would be easier to say that this water is from this river and this water is from another river and so on. But it is much more difficult to say that this is contact, this is feeling, and so on, when consciousness and its concomitants arise taking the same object. So paññā, when it arises with consciousness and perception, is a different dhamma, not mixed with the other concomitants, because like people say working together, so each person is different from another one, but they come together and they do some job together. And what are its characteristic, function, manifestation, and proximate cause? So we have to understand these things taught in Abhidhamma with reference to these four aspects: characteristic, function, manifestation, mode of manifestation, and proximate cause. You will find a lot of these in this chapter and the next chapters. Understanding has the characteristic of penetrating the individual essence of states. That means penetrating the nature of things, penetrating the individual nature or characteristic of things, as well as penetrating the common characteristic of things. Each state has its own characteristic, and if you watch closely, then you will come to see the characteristic of these states. And then there is the common characteristic of all states, all conditioned states, and that is impermanence and so on. So that also you see through paññā or understanding. So the characteristic of paññā is penetrating the individual essence of states or the nature of states. Its function is to abolish the darkness of delusion. It is like lightning. When lightning flashes, darkness is dispelled. So dispelling of darkness, or here darkness of delusion or ignorance, is its function. The delusion which conceals the individual essence of states. So delusion or ignorance is compared to darkness. So when there is darkness, we cannot see things in this room. If this room is dark, then we cannot see things in this room. And when there is light, we can see things. So darkness, just as darkness hides things from being seen, delusion or ignorance conceals the individual essence of states. We do not see or know the individual essence of states because there is delusion or ignorance. It is manifested as non-delusion. So when you watch paññā itself, it will appear to you, to your mind, as it is non-delusion. Because of the words, one who is concentrated knows and sees correctly, its proximate cause is concentration. So the paññā meant here, that is vipassana paññā, and its proximate cause is what? Concentration. That is why I always say concentration is important, and when there is no concentration, no paññā or penetration into the nature of things can arise. And then many kinds of paññā, understanding. First one, then two, three, four, and so on. So paññā is one according to its characteristic of penetrating the individual essence. But it is two, page 482, paragraph 9. As regards the twofold section, the mundane is that associated with the mundane path. Mundane path means especially during vipassana meditation. So during vipassana meditation, the factors of path arise in your mind. Say, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, and right understanding. So, mundane understanding is that associated with the mundane path. That means vipassana meditation. And supramundane is that associated with the supramundane path. That is, at the moment of enlightenment. At the moment of enlightenment, what is called path consciousness arises. And paññā accompanying that path consciousness is called here supramundane paññā. So it is of two kinds. In the second diet, that subject to kankas is that which is the object of kankas. Or we can just say mental defilements. So which can be the object of mental defilements. That free from kanka is not their object, so which cannot be the object of mental defilement. So this diet is the same in meaning as the mundane and supramundane. So subject to kanka means mundane, and free from kanka means supramundane. The same method applies to the diet subject to kanka and free from kanka and so on. Now in the third diet, when a man wants to begin insight, his understanding of the defining of the four immaterial aggregates is understanding as defining of mentality. So defining of mentality, that means clearly seeing or clearly understanding the mentality is the defining of mentality, and clearly seeing or understanding the material aggregate is understanding as defining of materiality. So it is of two kinds. So in short, it is understanding of mind and understanding of matter. And the fourth diet understanding belong to two of the kinds of sensory profitable consciousness and belonging to 16 of the kinds of path consciousnesses with four of the jhanas and the fourfold method is accompanied by joy. Sense via profitable consciousness, that is karma vajra kusala. So two of the kinds, two of them, and belonging to 16 of the kinds of path consciousness, with four of the jhanas and the fivefold method, is accompanied by joy. Now, what is 16? The four paths with the first jhana and those with the second, third, and fourth. Out of the five. Now here the commentator is using the fivefold method, five jhanas, not four jhanas. So the first, second, third, and fourth jhanas are accompanied by joy, and the fifth is accompanied by equanimity. So accompanied by joy means jhanas up to the fourth. Understanding belonging to two of the kinds of sensory or profitable consciousness and belonging to the remaining four kinds of path consciousness, that is the fifth jhana, is accompanied by equanimity. So panya accompanied by joy and panya accompanied by equanimity. In the sense sphere consciousness, two are accompanied by joy and two are accompanied by equanimity. In the fifth diet, understanding belonging to the first path is called plane of seeing. Now here seeing means seeing Nibbana in the first place, or initial seeing of Nibbana. So plane of seeing means that belonging to the first path. The first path is called seeing or dasana in Pali, because it sees Nibbana first. Understanding belonging to the remaining three paths, that is second, third, and fourth paths, they are called plane of development, bhavana. So it is of two kinds. And then, as regards the triads, understanding acquired without hearing from another is that consisting in what is reasoned. That means understanding from one's own thinking, understanding which arises from one's own thinking, and not heard from others, or not having read books, and that is understanding consisting in what is reasoned or what is thought. And the second one is understanding consisting in what is heard. That means understanding obtained through listening to others or through reading books. And the last one is understanding consisting in development. Here development means practice of meditation. So understanding obtained through the practice of meditation is that which consists in development. So there are three kinds of panya mentioned here. And then there is a quotation. In this quotation, about five lines down, that concerns ownership of deeds. That means understanding that beings have karma only as their own, or is in conformity with truth. That means just vipassana, because vipassana helps us to see the true nature of things. And so in conformity with truth here means just vipassana. And then paragraph 15 says, the understanding that occurs contingent upon sensory states has a limited object. That means understanding that takes sensory states as object. That is called understanding which has a limited object. And then understanding Taking the fine material sphere states or immaterial sphere states as an object is called exalted panya, having an exalted object. And this is mundane insight. That which occurs contingent upon nirvana has a measureless subject. And that is supramundane insight. Now, insight means vipassana, and vipassana is mundane, not supramundane. When you reach the enlightenment stage or enlightenment moment, it becomes supramundane. So, in fact, there is no supramundane insight. Insight is always mundane. But here, by supramundane insight, the other meant the path understanding of path, and not vipassana understanding. So it is of three kinds. And then it is increase, that is called improvement. And that is twofold, as the elimination of harm and the arousing of good. Skill in improvement is skill in these, according as it is said. So this is skill in improvement. Skill in, say, development. The next one is skill in detriment. That means understanding the diminution of good and the arousing of harm. And the third one is what? Paragraph 18. But in either of these cases, any skill in means, then in causes of production, means and cause of production are the same here. Means just the cause of production of such and such things, which skill occurs at that moment and is aroused on that occasion is what is called skill in means. I think you are familiar with the word upaya. It is now used a lot by people here. So upaya. Here, upaya is translated as means. So skill in means means, in Pali it is upaya kosala. Skill in understanding how to do things at a given moment. And it is aroused on that occasion. So that means it just pops up when there is some occasion. So it is not premeditated. So it is of three kinds. And then the other, in the fourth triad, insight understanding initiated by apprehending one's own aggregate is interpreting the internal. Here, interpreting means just reflecting upon or paying attention to. That is internal. And external is taking other people's aggregate as object of meditation, and that is external. And then both are interpreting the internal and external, and there is a footnote for the word abhinivesa in Pali, and the other said at the end that it is interpretation or misinterpretation and insistence have been chosen here as a rendering. So interpretation just means something like a view on a given object. And then tetrads, four kinds of knowledge or four kinds of understanding. Say understanding of suffering, first noble truth; understanding of origin of suffering, second noble truth; understanding of cessation of suffering, and understanding of the way leading to the cessation of suffering. And then the next tetrad is four kinds of discriminations. And these four kinds of discriminations are mentioned in the commentaries very often. And sometimes When the enlightenment of a person is described, the books would say he gained enlightenment along with the four discriminations. That is, this is a special knowledge. But you don't have to practice in a special way, but you just practice Vipassana meditation, and then when you become enlightened, these four kinds of knowledge automatically come to you. So these are called four discriminations or patisambhida. Knowledge about meaning is the discrimination of meaning. Knowledge about law is the discrimination of law. Knowledge about enunciation of language dealing with meaning and law is the discrimination of language. Knowledge about kinds of knowledge about knowledge is discrimination of perspicuity. So there are four kinds of discriminations. Here in meaning, atta is briefly a term for the fruit of a cause. So the Pali word is atta, and the Pali word atta can mean a result or purpose, and also fruit, also meaning, and also a result. So if we translate it as just meaning, it may create some misunderstanding, but it is difficult to translate this word into any language, because as we'll see, the word atta here means five things: anything conditionally produced, that is one; two, nibbana; three, the meaning of what is spoken, that means the meaning of words; and four, result of karma; and five, functional consciousness. Should be understood as meaning. So when we say knowledge about meaning or discrimination of meaning, means knowledge about these five things. When anyone reviews that meaning, any knowledge of his falling within the category concerned with meaning is the discrimination of meaning. So discrimination of meaning means understanding of the things conditionally produced, understanding of nibbana, understanding of the meaning of a word, understanding of the result of the karma, and understanding of the functional consciousness. And then second one is dhamma, law. It's briefly a term for condition. For since a condition necessitates whatever it may be, makes it occur, or allows it to happen, it is therefore called law or dhamma. So discrimination of law means understanding of the condition or understanding of the cause. But in particular, the five things namely are meant by the word dhamma here. One, any cause that produces fruit. Two, the noble path. It is a cause of the fruition. Three, what is spoken, that means the words or the language. And four, what is profitable, kusala. And five, what is unprofitable, akusala, should be understood as law. So by the word dhamma, these five things are meant. When anyone reviews that knowledge and that law, any knowledge of it falling within the category concerned with law is the discrimination of law. So discrimination of condition or discrimination of cause or understanding of causes. And this same meaning is shown in the Abhidhamma by the following analysis. So this is a quotation from the second book of Abhidhamma. Now let's go to 25. Paragraph 25. Knowledge about enunciation of language dealing with meaning and law. That is the language that is individual essence. Now, the word sabhava is translated normally translated as individual essence. But here, the word sabhava is explained in the sub-commentary as something like correct or not that which does not change or that which does not deteriorate. That is called the sabhava niruti in Pali. The usage that has no exceptions, that means that is definite, that is not ambiguous, something like that, and deals with that meaning and that law. Any knowledge falling within the category concerned with the enunciation of that, with the speaking, with the utterance of that, concerned with the root speech of all beings, the Magadhan language, that is individual essence. Now, in Theravada Buddhism, the language of Magadha is said to be the root speech of all beings, the original language of all beings. So, the belief of Theravada Buddhists is that the Magadha language, or the Pali language as we know it now, Pali language is the original language of all beings. Only after say many years, different people developed different dialects and then they became languages. So this is the belief of ancient teachers.
Hindu. So it's sort of pre-Pali, Magadha language?
Yeah, Magadha language is taken to be Pali. All.
But historically it's not necessarily believed that that's true, or is it just that they're related?
I think the present-day Pali is the closest to the language used by the Buddha. It is difficult to say that it is the language of the Buddha, because we really don't know with which language the Buddha used. But Buddha used the language which was current at his time, and which was understood by all people, and not by high class people only. Because once two Brahmins who became monks asked him to turn his teachings into Vedic Sanskrit, and Buddha rejected them. Buddha said, my Dhamma is for all people, not for a selected few. So he used the language which was understood by, say, all people, the common language, maybe.
So we now think that actually the language of India, which there are many languages in India now, and varied dialects, and Buddha traveled greatly throughout India, that maybe at that time there was more common, there weren't so many languages, there was a more common language? We don't know.
We don't know, but there may be different languages in different parts, or maybe dialects in different parts of the country. And the language Buddha used may be understood by all people where he roamed. And that language is said to be the Mula Bhasa, we call it Mula Bhasa, root speech of all beings. In other words, the language of law, as soon as it hears it spoken, pronounced, uttered, knows. Now this is the individual essence language. This is not the individual essence language. That means it is a correct language. It is not a correct language, something like that. So a person who has got this kind of discrimination knows that this is correct and this is not. This is a grammatically correct and this is not. So, the example given here is, one who has reached the discrimination of language knows on hearing the words paso, vidana, etc., that this is the individual essence language, but that means this is the correct language. And on hearing pasa, vidano, etc., he knows that this is not the individual essence language. It is not the correct word or correct language, because the word pasa is masculine gender. So it is, in the nominative case, it must be paso, and it can never be passa in nominative case. So when you say passa, you know this is wrong. This is grammatically wrong. The word vedana belongs to feminine gender. It is never in the masculine gender. So if you say vedano, then you put a feminine word into masculine gender, and so it is wrong. So if you do not know Pali, then you try to get enlightenment and get these four kinds of discrimination, and then you will automatically understand Pali. That is what is meant here. So Pali language is said to be the root speech of all beings, and said to be the best of the languages. Now, the language we call Pali is never mentioned as Pali language in the commentaries. In the commentaries, it is referred to as Magadha language or root language. The word Pali simply means the text, as against commentaries and sub-commentaries. But later on, since it is the language in which the texts were recorded, we call it a Pali language. So the word Pali language is of recent origin, not used by commentaries and sub-commentaries. So, and what they used is the word Mula Bhasa or Magadha or Magadhi Bhasa, the language of the Magadha country. It is maybe like a state in this country. During the time of the Buddha, there were 16, we call them 16 countries, but not 16 countries, 16 states or districts. So Magadha was one of them. And knowledge about kinds of knowledge, that is knowledge of knowledge. So that is discrimination of perspicuity. And this these four kinds of discrimination we can make them clear, we can make them sharp, or we can make them we can make ourselves adept in these four by five means, and these five means are given in paragraph 28. And though they come into the categories of the two planes, thus they are nevertheless distinguishable in five aspects. That is to say, as achievement and so on. Actually, they can be brought to perfection by these five things. By achievement, that means by enlightenment. By achievement, by mastery of scriptures, by hearing, by questioning, and by prior effort. So achievement is the reaching of arahantship, but it is the best mentioned here. So reaching of other stages of enlightenment is also meant here. Mastery of scriptures is mastery of Buddha's word. Hearing is learning the Dharma carefully and attentively. Questioning is discussion of naughty passages and explanatory passages and the text commentaries and so on. Prior effort is devotion to insight in the dispensation of former Buddhas. So it is like a paramita. Up to the vicinity of the stages of conformity and change of lineage by one who has practiced the duty of going with the meditation subject on arms round and coming back with it. Now, monks are described as of different kinds, and there are monks who take meditation even when they go to the village for alms, and they take back meditation to the monastery. That means When they go to the village, they go with meditation, and when they come back from village, they come back with meditation. So such persons, so they have practiced meditation in this way. So that is what is meant here by the duty of going with the meditation subject on arms round and coming back with it. And they may have reached the stages of vipassana just short of enlightenment. If they are enlightened, they don't have to worry about, say, practicing again to gain enlightenment. So here, up to the vicinity of the stages of conformity and change of lineage simply means just short of enlightenment. So those who have practiced vipassana meditation in the former Buddhas, that means in their former lives, just short of enlightenment. So that is called prior effort. So such people may get enlightenment in this life and may get these four kinds of discriminations. And then some other said in a different way, but more or less the same. So prior effort, great learning, and then dialects, scriptures, questioning, achievement, wisdom.